So, how you guys doing? So,
Very well.
we're gonna go.
Wonderful.
We're gonna study with your permission. Yecheskel Kaf, Vahi Bashana. We start. It actually starts with Bet, Pasuk Bet. Okay, it's chapter 20,
So this is this
Yecheskel.
is the Sephardi version, right?
Yeah, no, I think it is Ashkenaz. This machlokot. Different people read different things, but I thought this was the Ashkenaz one, so that's when I prepared.
It's a Sephardi one, but it's okay. We
Really? Is it?
well,
You
that's what
sure?
my art scroll
I don't know.
says.
I saw different.
My art scroll says, according to the Ashkenazi custom, we read from Ezekiel 22:1-16. According to the Sephardi custom, we read Ezekiel 22:20. So that's
Oh,
fine.
really?
That's
Okay,
fine.
we'll do
There's
it.
like six different versions what you read, so That's true. And
I
listen,
yeah,
for example,
it's like I looked up online. I thought, and so I saw in Safari, it automatically showed it has 20.
but I think
So
you're I think you're Sephardi, so
the Minhag Yerushalayim
you're
is doing the same thing from Essex. So.
answer.
Yeah, it's a whole different thing. All right, we'll go through this. I think this is a very, very intriguing reading, and comparing it to Kedoshim to you. It's quite interesting. I'd like to just start with one pasuk, one verse from Mishlei, which is very, very significant. It's in Mishlei. You don't have to look it up, but I tell you, it's Mishlei Mem Gimel. Wait, Mishlei Gimel, pasuk Yud Aleph, and it goes like this. And I think it's a very important verse. It goes Musar et Musar Adonai Beni Atim As Ba'atakos Betochakto. He makes this general statement. He says Musar Hashem, Musar Hashem. When you get Musar Hashem, he's telling his son or his student Beni Atim As. Don't reject it. Don't reject it. Basically. And don't be repelled by Hashem's tochacha, by Hashem's rebuke. Now, this verse, of course, can be applied to so many different levels, and I think this is a very important principle we have when we read the tochachot or the rebukes that we see throughout the Tanakh. And here we have a very interesting rebuke by Hashem through the prophet Yechezkel. It happened on the seventh in verse one. It says, "Vayhi." Let's start with verse one, even though it's not really part of the haftarah, with your mission. It says, "Vayhi." Want me to read it with Tami with a drop?
Sure, of course.
Okay. "Vayhi bashana shevi'i b'chamishi be'asor la'chodesh." באו אנשים מזקני ישראל לדרוש את אדוני וישבו לפניי. So what happened was in the seventh year of the seventh year of the when the of, since the king Joachim was exiled out of Israel. It was 4 years before the destruction of Beit HaMikdash when this meeting happened. 4 years before the destruction of Beit HaMikdash. And it was the 10th of Av. Interestingly enough, the 10th of Av. Okay, which I don't know the answers to this. I'm just pointing out that it was the 10th of Av that the elders of Israel came in before Yehezkel. And what did they want? Lidrosh et Hashem. They wanted to, the word Lidrosh is to ask Hashem to let's just say inquire of Hashem. Okay, I don't know what that means, but we'll go on and see how the prophecy pans out. And then suddenly, in verse two, while they were standing in front of him, Hashem's word came to him, came to Yehezkel. So what does he say? Ben Adam, daber el zikne Yisrael ve'amata alehem. Go speak to these elders of Israel and tell them. Ko amar Adonai Elohim. Thus speaks. This is how is Hashem Adonai Elohim is one of the ways that Hashem is called in the Tanakh. Haledroshoti atem ba'im chayani im daresh lachem ne'um Adonai Elohim. It says, Haledrosh oti atem ba'im. Ah, you came to ask of me, inquire of me. Hashem is telling Yehezkel to tell the elders of Israel. He swears. Hashem makes a shevuah. Chayani, as I live. Im daresh lachem, nu my Adonai Elohim. And now he's saying that I will not. I swear in my own that I'm alive. Hashem is saying very interesting. Swear. I will not. Basically saying I will not allow you to inquire of me. So it's an interesting. It's an interesting thing. He's saying basically I'm not gonna reply to you. So I think what it's saying here is saying it's not that I'm not going to answer you. I'm not going to answer you to what you came to ask of me, but I am going to answer you in a different level, on a totally different level. You're coming to me you, the elders are inquiring of me. Hashem is saying on your level, in a very minuscule level. Sorry,
in the English it sounds a little worse. It's is it to seek of me that you come? Meaning, you're not even really coming to ask God anything, whether you're davening or korban. You're not really coming to me. You're just going through the motions for your own reasons.
Yeah.
You're not even coming to God.
Yeah. Yeah. I see it a little differently. I see it a little differently, but I think you're right. I think that's correct. I think you're coming in a very, in a totally different wavelength. But I'm going to answer you on a totally different wavelength. A totally different wavelength, Hashem is saying. He's implying. Why? Because we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does reply to them. So, okay, but you're right. Totally different wavelength. So what does Hashem tell Yehezkel? He says like this, Hatishpot otam, Hatishpot ben adam. Et to avot avotam odi'am. He says like this. He says, I'm not going to shpot. I'm not going to judge them individually as individuals. Because I was going to judge them individually. There's no way. There's no communication here. There's absolutely no communication. So but really, what he's got? What
the English is really rather different. Because the family accused them of not really coming to him, his answer is, you know, I'm not going to make myself accessible to you because you're not really coming to me to ask for anything. So I'm not going to really respond to you.
Right. But he's right. Does the question, the per, in other words, you're right. It's correct. But the fact is, he does respond.
He says, I'm not going to make myself accessible. That's the word of the God. You think you're coming to me. I'm not bothered to make myself accessible to you. That's his answer.
Okay, there's two things I question on that specific translation. Because he says, atishpot otam. Atishpot, what does it mean accessible? It doesn't say accessible. It doesn't mean accessible. That's one. Second of all, the word tishpot means learn lashon shofet, to judge. So I think what Hashem is saying here to Yehezkel, and specifically to the elders that came to inquire of Hashem, he says, we're totally different wavelengths. I'm not going to judge atishpot otam, atishpot ben adam. But I'm going to do? I'm going to do that something better. You ask me for something, I'm going to give you something better. And I think there's something better. I think all of us have a lot to say about the following prophecy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Yehezkel. I'm going to tell you something that you don't know. I'm going to tell you the what your forefathers did, and then you didn't rise above that. So now that I'm telling you something, you're going to see that it has a lot to do with. I mean, I personally didn't realize the extent when I studied this prophecy. Next verse, number 5. Ve'amarta alehem ko amar Adonai Elohim biyom bachori beYisrael va'esa yadi lezera bet Yaakov va'evada lahem be'eretz Mitzrayim va'esa yadi lahem lemor ani Adonai Elohim. So he says like this, ve'amarta alehem, tell them, he's saying, yes, go tell the elders. Thus speaks Hashem. Biyom bachori b'Yisrael, the day doesn't mean the day, but it means like the time. Bachori b'Yisrael, when I chose Israel. And what did I do when I chose Israel? Va'esa yadi, and I swore, I raised my hand, and as a pledge, to who? To Zera bet Yaakov, to the children of Yaakov, which is the tribes, etc., and then became the people. And I let them know where, in Egypt, Beretz Mitzrayim. And remember that time when Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to the people and told them, here I am, Hashem let himself known to the Jewish people in Egypt. Next verse 6. Bayomahu nasati yadi lahem lehotziam me'eres Mitzrayim le'eres asher tarti lahem zabat chalav udvash sevihi lechol ha'aratzot. He says, Bayomahu, on that day, nasati yadi lahem, and I swore to them, lehotziam eres, that I am going to take them out of Egypt. Eretz asher tarti lahem, in a special land that I picked for them, a beautiful land. A land that's flowing with milk and honey. It's Sevihi lechol aratzot, the most beautiful of all lands. He says, Va'omar alehem ish kutze enav hashlichu ugilu le'mesayim atetamau ani Adonai Elohechem. He said, and Va'omar alehem, and I told them, shikutze enav. All this avodah zarah, shikutze enav, these disgusting things, interesting enav, the things that you see that are you absorbed into your consciousness, throw away. Okay, ugirule Mitzrayim atedamau, don't become. This is in Egypt, by the way. Okay, this is in Egypt, and all the avodah zarah girule of Egypt. All the avodah zarah, gilulei Mitzrayim, don't become tameh from them. I am your God. This is telling him in Egypt, the Jewish people in Egypt. This is what I found very, very interesting. And what happened in Egypt? What happened? Vayamru bi, velo avu lishmo alai. And they did not listen to me. What is the Vayamru? I'll tell you what I think the word Vayamru means. You know what Vayamru means, I think? It comes from the word mar, bitter. And instead of your approach to me to be a one of sweetness, I'm talking to you. Hashem is talking to the Jewish people in Egypt and giving something amazingly beautiful, something sweet. And what did you do? You viewed me as something bitter. Vayamruvi, and your bitterness approach towards me, which is interesting, the bitter herbs. I'm not make any connection of that, but let's see. Vayamruvi, velo avu lishmo elai. And in Egypt, you didn't listen to me. Ish et shekutze enehem lo hishlichu. All that with Azara you guys were doing in Egypt, you didn't throw away. Vegilule mitzayim lo azavu. And you didn't, even in Egypt, you didn't. Cast away any that with us. Va'omar lishpoch hameti alehem. What did I say to myself? You know what? This is ridiculous. In Egypt, I'm doing all these different things for you. And I thought to myself, you know what? Ani yishpoch hamati alehem. I will throw my anger on you. Nechalot api bahem. Betoch eretz Mitzrayim. Even in Egypt, I was thinking of destroying you. Interesting. So, I don't remember. You remember that?
Because most Jews died in Egypt.
What? I mean,
the Midrash is most Jews died in Egypt in the plague of darkness.
Yeah, one, three, five, four fifths, I think, right?
But if the target audience here are Jews in Bavel, what is the point of drudging this up now of an event that occurred, I don't know, 1,000 years earlier?
I think that's an incredible question. That's exactly my point. That's the point of, you want me to tell you now? Or should I tell you after?
You can say that it's a cliffhanger, but it's kind of like your mother blaming you for what your great, 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 great grandparents did.
Right.
You know, and you'd be like, well, okay. I'm sorry. I'm like, what are you supposed to say?
I think
I mean, it's like, it's not the kind of musha that speaks to people when you get blamed for your
great-great-great-grandparents'
actions.
You're absolutely correct, but this we're not talking. You're absolutely correct.
Okay? You also get punished, not just blamed.
You can get punished.
So what parents, right?
Right. So the thing is like this, Alex. What I think, the way I view this, is that their modus operandi did not change. Even when they were in Egypt, you think that after Egypt, you went into God, and you're going to see the rest of the prophecy. He talks about from Egypt. In Egypt, okay, then in the Midbar, and in Israel, guys, you never. Stop, I'm talking Israel. You have not changed. You still think the same. Your brains function in the same modus operandi. The same MO is still happening to you.
Just to give the people the benefit of the doubt, you know, it's hard to blame an American for acting like an American. You know,
I think it's something else.
You grow up in America all your life.
Right.
You still like baseball. You still like baseball. You know, it's very hard to take out of yourself the culture that you're raised in, even though it may serve you better somehow to do so. I mean, even us, one generation removed. Now, it would be unusual to watch our Halavai, you know, we have 10 generations later. Are they still going to be watching baseball and eating apple pie? That'd be a little unusual. But if they would, like the tradition of the family, it reminds me of Jews in Efrat that they keep Thanksgiving. Why do they keep Thanksgiving?
Yeah, but Bruce, my question to you is this. We're not talking about, I agree with you, but you can't
take
the...
I think Hashem is saying...
Yeah.
There's other considerations that you guys don't know. That's what you're saying.
Of course. But
no, that's what Hashem is saying to them. You know, there's so much more behind what I'm doing that you guys aren't aware of.
Right.
Well, how does that help if they're unaware of it?
I mean, no, it does help. Because not talking about
then how can they respond? I mean, they're
unaware. Because you're not talking about turkey and you're not talking about hot dogs. You're talking about things
culture?
That are deeply embedded into their culture, into the way they think.
And they did it in Eretz Israel, and they do it in Bavel. It's one world view, you know, it's like...
Right.
Obviously, God's, you know, letting them know, you're still acting the same way. And they're
right.
Like, you're right. I mean, what can we do? I mean, obviously...
Yeah, but what Avi just said, can you repeat yourself?
There's so many factors that when you're sort of complaining to God, as God said, I can't explain to you. There's so many other factors that go into the decisions that you know you can't question what I'm doing in a way.
I don't think they could. I don't think they complained. They had a question for Ezekiel. Ezekiel's just bringing them a nevuah from God,
right?
In Babylonia, no one was complaining.
Right, they're not complaining. I think you're right. I think it's a very important. In other words, right now for us, look, let's say for us right now, okay, let's face it. Like the rabbi said before, I overheard the last of his thing today. They have a million good people doing good things today, Baruch Hashem. Okay. We are doing those good things because we learned the Hezkel as a people. It's part of our thinking today. We said, we can't do that stuff anymore. It's not, we're already we already have been cured of that illness, I think, as a people. And we are cured of that illness because of Yehezkel. We take it for granted. And that's why it's very important for us to read Yehezkel and all the prophets, because it shows us where we were then and where we are now. That's the point. Because of the history.
I think that if we don't do Avodah Zarah today, which we don't,
right,
speaking, it's because the world doesn't. Would we live in a world that doesn't?
I think maybe the world, no, but first of all, the world does. Bruce, excuse me, one second.
Well, I mean, our world. I'm not talking about India. I'm talking about our world.
What world is your world?
When
you get Jewish chinuch, you get it contrary to everything you're saying as far as culture. We have a whole different upbringing and outlook.
Well, not everyone here got Jewish education.
Well, that's the fault.
You can't blame people. They don't have a Jewish education. Most Jews in America don't have any Jewish education.
Someone didn't give it to them, and so you can blame them.
No, but I'm saying they have zero Jewish education. Zero.
Unfortunately, but they should have gotten it.
Well, okay, right. So can those people be blamed for acting like Americans?
What do you mean? But they have to be educated.
I agree, but again, can you blame them if they have zero Jewish education? You're right. They need to get it. But, you know, personally, there's a lot of money there. Every Jew could get Jewish education. Would some billionaire set it up? That doesn't mean Jews would even try to get it. They have no idea why they would do it. It's like they're completely unaffiliated. So how can
right.
Today we can't really blame them for being completely.
You don't have a bris, you're high of kares, right? You don't have a bris, you're high of kares. You have to give yourself a bris, so maybe they also have to find a way to educate themselves.
And then it's a lot easier to say that. It's like everyone should be in phenomenal shape. Everyone here should be able to jog 10K, right?
Wow. We should all be able to
jog 10K and eat like, you know, enough to have a perfect body weight. We should. God gave us the bodies. We should be in great, phenomenal shape with the body God gave us. Not just our mind and soul, our bodies. So how many do that? And we know we should.
Bruce, you're preaching to the, you know.
God's blaming the people.
No, God is not blaming. God is not, in this case, I don't believe God is blaming the people.
You're acting today just like you always did in Egypt.
He's telling the people because he wants to cure by hearing the word.
They can't cure themselves. How are they going to cure themselves?
They can't cure themselves. No, but by reading this and having this reopening understanding.
That's for us today. I'm talking about that.
Bruce, let me finish my words. Then you can comment on what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that because of the words of Yehezkel, the healing words, they're painful, but the healing words of Yehezkel, we, the Jewish people, became who we are today. We never would have been cured of that disease. It's because Yehezkel that was able to burn out the Avodah Zarah from our collective consciousness.
No, I don't agree with you.
That's my theory.
Well, the world that they lived in at that time, when the Jews returned to Judea, Avodah Zarah was removed from the way.
Ouch.
The Jews are part of that world. It was removed from the society in general. And so Jews were removed from Avodah Zarah, thankfully. But it wasn't like they did it. The society around them, they all did it.
Well, I don't understand what you're saying. I mean, I'm just telling you that because of your...
It was no longer believed.
Bruce, let's read the rest of the... It's only a few more verses, and then we can discuss the detail. And okay? So now Hashem is continuing speaking to Yehezkel and telling the elders, okay? ואתן להם את חוקותיי ואת משפטיי הודעתי אותם אשר יעשה אותם האדם וחי בהם. So he's saying, I gave you these laws that I educated you. You're talking about education. I gave you these laws and taught it to you, and that you could be able to live a good life. וגם את שבתותיי נתתי להם להיות לאות ביני וביניהם לדעת כי אני אדוני מקדשם. Another thing he gave you, an eternal concept, something that's beyond nature, something that's beyond nature, that's proof that the Torah is mehashamayim. This concept of Shabbat. Shabbat could never be created. The idea of Shabbat could never be created by human beings. And it's obviously something that's an ought. What ought is something that is a sign between you and me. I'm giving you this eternal covenant, this eternal mitzvah called Shabbat. Okay? So in other words, so it's a revolutionary concept. It's not a day off. It's much higher than, it's way beyond a day off, Shabbat. And therefore, I separated you from humanity. I separated you from humanity.
Are you gargling in the background? Are you using the toilet? What is going on?
Alex, everybody, guys, this is a very, very, very...
Too high. Very powerful.
This is a very powerful pasuk, okay? Right. Very powerful verse, okay? The word kadosh. Kadosh, we say holy, right? But really the word kadosh means to be separate. It can be even a karem, karem, a vineyard that becomes a sur, becomes a it's called Kodesh. It means Kodesh. It means it's separate and far away, separated. Okay? So through the Shabbat, Hashem made us a completely different creatures, people. Hashem changed us, revolutionized the Jewish people by giving us the Shabbat. That's why he says, Ladat ki ani Adonai mikadesham. Through Shabbat, we are different. That's why when people mechalel Shabbat, they don't understand. I mean, I don't judge people, but whatever. But they don't understand what they're doing. They're just like, wow. It's like it's an insane thing.
Do you know that the Persian government, when they allowed Jews to come back to Judea and unbelievably financed the construction of the Second Temple and provided us with a bodyguard, they also gave us the power to enforce the Torah on penalty of death. And since the Judean returned to Judea, that's when the Torah became the law of the land. Prior to that, there was not a lot of Torah going on. You can read Tanakh and examine that.
After I agree.
The Jews returned, because the Persians made it by penalty of death. You have to follow your chachamim, and we got that from the Persian government. Then Jews started keeping the Torah.
It's interesting. I never saw the penalty of death aspect. But I could tell you that what I did see is that the Sanhedrin, the legal system, the same way they took the same legal model that they had in Persia, the 120, and they applied it to Israel.
Well, the Russians did to the authority of the government, the Persian government.
Yeah. So that sounds very,
that's
very
rather remarkable in terms of who the our enemies are today, the Iranians.
Yeah, that is funny. You're right. That is funny. But okay, so
that's how we kept it. It wasn't like we decided it's a great idea, it's lofty, it's beautiful. No.
Right.
The government had authority to enforce it in a police fashion, and that's when Jews started keeping Torah.
Yeah, you're right. I want to discuss this issue about penalty of death in a few minutes, but I want to just go on in the verses so we can finish it up to the 20, up to, 20. There's just a few more verses. ויאמרו בי בית ישראל במדבר בחוקותיי לא הלכו ואת משפטיי מעשו. Again, this word ויאמרו בי, again, the concept of you had a bitter approach towards me, the Jewish people. Again, bitterness is a very important point. ואת משפטיי מעשו, and you rejected my law. אשר יעשה אותם האדם וחי בהם, that a person, a human being, can live, could follow these laws and live beautifully. And my Shabbatot, this amazing thing called establishment called Shabbat, chilu me'od. And this is in the midbar. This is in the desert. You rejected me totally in the desert. Okay?
And by the way, in the desert, when the men picked up sticks, penalty of death.
Death. Ah, nice point.
So, I
want to hear what you have to say. It's very important because I never heard of that one. Finish this these verses. So it says that, but I did. Why? Because of my name. What does it mean, because of my name? What do you think? What does it mean, l'man shemi? Because of my name? What does it mean, my name?
Very enigmatic.
No, really, what do you think? Yeah, you know what it means?
Well, if for people who believe in powers, whether you're a polytheist or monotheist, when you're getting a law in the name of a higher authority, it's because of the name. Like, why do you follow anything? My father told me. The principal told me. The rabbi told me. God told me. So this is because of, I'm God, my name. Because of me, I gave you these laws.
Right. Okay. But I think it's a little bit, I have a little deeper explanation. It's not my explanation. Okay. I got it from Rabbi Uri Sherky. But it's close to what you're saying. It doesn't contradict what you're saying, but it's a little bit, I think it's a little bit better, a little sharper. He says, Leman Shemi means, you ever hear the expression in the Gemara? He says, Leshem Ma. Leshem Ma. It means for what purpose? So the way I understand this is Leman Shemi means I have a purpose here for the humanity. So that's what I understand Leman Shemi. In other words, I have a purpose. You may not be able to grasp it, but I'm the creator of the universe. I have a certain purpose for humanity. That's why I did. I continue doing, even though you were misbehaving. Okay. So but then we'll continue the verse. V'gamani nasati yadi lahem b'midbar libeti havi ota mila aretz ashenatati. And at one point I said, you know what? I'm not going to forget it. I'm not going to bring it to Israel. I'm not going to bring it to Israel. I swore I'm not going to bring it to Israel. The passion is this incredible. I mean, okay, next word, next verse. So he said again, he goes and Yan b'mishpatai ma'asu. Again, my laws, I gave you these amazing laws. You hated them, you rejected them. And you didn't go according to my hukot. V'shabetotai chilelu. And that, by the way, you know, it's funny, we have that mikoshesh etzim. You know, the guy that mikoshesh etzim that was killed was a penalty of death. Okay, we'll discuss that afterwards. And you didn't follow my Shabbatot. Batachos enei alehem mishachatam. And yeah. Velo asiti otam kalava midbar. And in Egypt, I had Rachmanut for you. Tachos means chas. I had Rachmanut. My eye had Rachmanut for you. So I didn't destroy you in the midbar. Okay. Goes on. Va'amar el benehem. במדבר בחוקי אבותיכם אתלכו במשפטיהם אתשמורו וגלליהם אתתמאו. So the ones, the children, means the you know, and after 40 years, the second generation went into Israel, and I told them, do not follow, don't do what your fathers did in the midbar. אני אדוני אלוהיכם בחוקותיי ילכו ובמשפטיי שמרו ועשו אותם. I am the eternal. I'm the eternal. בחוקותיי ילכו, follow my mitzvot, and you will, and do them. And this is the end. Now this verse is the end of the 20, is the end of the Haftarah. בשבתותיי קדשו. And please, my שבתות, make them separate, make them different. Make them, understand, this is not, we're not talking about a day off here. And this Shabbat is an ought It's a special sign between you and me, like a husband and wife. I told my, it's like a husband and wife. They have a special ought. They have a special sign, the ring or something that symbolizes this type of eternal bond. Ladaat, in which case your consciousness can be raised above that which is created into something which is part of creation, which is beyond creation, which is the Torah. Torah is Torah Me'ashamayim, which is because of the Shabbat and the rest of the Torah, but especially the Shabbat, that brings our consciousness above what we call anthropocentric thinking. Okay? Let's look at that with that. I had to put it in. I couldn't help it. Ki ani Adonai Eloheichem. Because I am your God. Okay, so Shabbat is a very powerful tool, powerful gift that Hashem gave us. And I think that it's very important. Listen, we halakhically, we have to read Tanakh. You know, we have to read it. But why? I ask myself all the time, why do I have to read this? Why do I have to read this all the time? It's like, it seems like, okay, we heard it already. You know what I mean? We heard it. We heard it. Almost all the Nevi'im speak about Avodah Zarah. The same thing. But why? Why, according to Jewish law, we have to read it? And it's because I think it's because it's very important. The same way that an alcoholic has to always meet once a month, whatever it is, in a meeting with Alcoholics Anonymous, and he has to admit, I am an alcoholic. The fact that we can see that, yes, it's in front of us. We did this Avodah Zarah. It's part of our history. We're able to overcome the Yetzirah or the Yetzer. We did. We overcame it. We don't have that anymore.
So what do we do with that now? Because we are no longer immersed in Avodah Zarah.
If we don't face our past.
No. Let's say we do. We read it and we understand it, and then what?
Then we're able to communicate with Hashem.
Let's say some kid that goes to Solomon Schechter in Bethel, you know, not a firm kid, but he's Jewishly educated. His family, yeah, they go to Shul on Shabbat. They drive there. Afterwards, they have a nice kiddush, and then they even hang out together. But maybe they put on a ball game. They're very Jewish in many respects. They're just not firm, and they read it, and they read this, and they say, Baruch Hashem, we don't do Avodah Zarah anymore. And we go to Shul every Shabbat. So you could say that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. Some people might say, so is the cup half empty or half full? At least with those Jews who actually read this every Shabbat, go to Shul, participate on some level of Shabbat, they're just not that. By the way, they're in America. They're not in Israel.
I hope one day they'll be able to.
Of course. So I'm just wondering what should some take away when they read this? What do they learn from it that they can apply? They're saying
it's hard to say because it's hard. It's a good question. I think that we hope that the people will be able to understand that Judaism is not like other forms of thinking, that it's. Prophet. It comes from a nevuah. So it's beyond that.
These people are really into it. I mean,
they see it in a very what's the word? Superficial way.
How do we know that?
I don't know. I can't judge them.
He's only taught by your Orthodox Jews.
But I can't judge them because I'm not Hashem. But
they know it deeply. They know it deeply. I'm just wondering.
No, they don't know it deeply. No, if you're going to drive on Shabbat, you totally miss the whole
point. I told them it's permitted.
Okay, but they don't. I'm not here to judge them. I'm saying what I would recommend.
I'm trying to not bring in the judgments by saying anything judgmental at all. I'm saying, what should they learn from it?
Let me answer it. What I would, if they asked me, what I would they, if they would come up with the one that one of them would come up with me and ask me, what's what I'm doing wrong? Like, what am I doing
no,
wrong?
They're not going to ask that. Why would they know to ask that? They just want to know, what do I learn from this? They're not doing anything wrong as far as
what
they know.
did they learn from what? From this prophecy?
From this Haftorah.
Ah, so I'll tell you.
What can I learn from this that I can apply?
But it's hard for me to listen. Shabbat, unless you understand the depth of what Shabbat is, unless you can really understand.
He thinks he does. He keeps.
But he doesn't, does he have that experience that we have on Shabbat?
Let's say that he does. Let's say that he does.
Then that's between him
and
Hashem.
Let's not be judgmental here.
That's a question that he has to ask himself.
So take a firm guy. What does a super firm guy learn from this?
That Shabbat is much more than something.
He knows that. He knows that. What should he learn that he doesn't know before reading this? A guy goes to the main yeshiva and he reads this. So
okay.
What will he learn from this that he didn't know before learning it? What is the takeaway?
What specifically? The whole prophecy?
Well, no, this Haftorah. This Haftorah.
Okay, so I'm telling you what I think. I told you what I think. I think that what he learned is he reinforces his connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Without these type of prophecies, you cannot validate your relationship with Hashem. Because we pretend that we never did that with a Zerah in our life, in our entire history.
What
That's why
before
the whole
reading Haftorah? You know, Haftorah is introduced very late in Jewish history.
I know that. I know.
What happened before?
They still read the Navi. They still read it. You tell me they never read Navi?
Not every week.
I don't understand. No, but they read it on their own. It was part of the. I don't know what they did in those days. The program. I have an idea, but I'm not going to go into it now.
It's a question. I don't. It's a question that's out there. I don't know the answer to the question. I'm not sure what one is meant to get from this, other than the historical perspective that Jews were messing up big time with the idolatry till not so long ago.
So what's wrong with that? I don't understand.
I don't know. I'm asking you. I'm asking what you would.
You have to know. You have to be part of your thinking process.
I might say the following. I might say that if I'm running a youth group in an Orthodox young Israel, and I'm the youth group leader, I might ask the kids, you know, because I used to be a leader of my young Judea chug.
Okay.
So we had to play games with the kids and encourage them to have discussion. So I might say that this was in New York, different communities of New York, where I was involved in Young Judea. So I was a Madrich in Young Judea. So, or I'm a tour guide here, and I take people around, and I wonder, what did they get from it? So the question is, when you ask people, when they read this, what did they get from it? They're like, they're not sure, because we admit we're not sure. So we might say, just like they were immersed in Avodah Zarah at that time, what today are we immersed in that might be a problem for our Jewish experience?
What do you think? I don't think that's a good. That's
what I'm asking them.
Plenty of Avodah Zarahs you can do today.
That was the first thing that you mentioned before, not you. I think it was Alex. And who was it that mentioned that? No, it was you. That you can't compare Thanksgiving.
No, I'm not. I'm asking them the question.
Right, it's a good question.
What do you think that they are doing that is immersing themselves in American culture that might be taking something away from the Jewish experience?
Immorality. How about first start?
What?
Immorality.
Yeah, no, good point.
The kid's 16. Let's say he's a perfectly moral kid.
If you live in America and you didn't go to yeshiva and stayed off the streets.
I want the kid to give his personal.
I think it's a good question. I like the question.
What does he see the goyim doing or other? What does he do personally? And you go around the room. What do he? And everyone should have a different answer.
Yeah, I think so. It's a good question.
That's the message that one could take when you read it. What do we and each of us do individually that might be taking something away from our Jewish connection to God? And everyone will have a different answer.
Good question. I think I like it. I like the question.
Well, I think that's the takeaway, because then it seems the voters are always a big obstacle to a lot of them. We don't have that today. We have other things today.
You're talking about formalize the voter zara. Voter zara has transferred into whatever you want it to be, but it's still the same concept.
Right. So I'm asking those people what they think.
Well, they probably don't want to admit it, whatever they're doing.
No, I was very good at getting, of course, kids could definitely say. They might say the pursuit of a career will give them challenges in life of, you know, should they be a lawyer and go to a chiluni court, where plenty say it's permitted? Or some people say you really shouldn't do that. So maybe they shouldn't become a lawyer. Should they become a doctor if they're a Kohen and they got to do autopsies on dead people? Maybe the guy should say, you know what, I'm a Kohen. Maybe I should not go to med school because some will tell them not to do. At least think about a topic and ask.
That doesn't sound like a vote of Zara topics.
It's not a vote of Zara. It's what that. The question
it's,
is,
it's not a bad thing. It's just like you have to know.
Question, what do you do? What do you personally do that takes away from your Jewish in the because that's the only thing I get out of this.
You cheat, you lie.
Then was idolatry. Fine,
but today we have assimilation into Western values, which are contrary to Judaism.
So I want each kid to say, but what value? What does he think he's doing that takes?
Okay, so I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, because a lot of good things are Western values. Respect for others, following a law and order, having democracy. There's a lot of things that are very nice about the outside world. They're perfectly fine.
Yeah, we have that already. It's not like something new to us.
Right, so what do they do that seems to take away? Maybe watching movies. Maybe. Maybe too much time watching movies. Because movies is it's an immersive culture that we live in where we were online a lot. So are people
you're comparing it to actual I don't know.
I'm not comparing it to voter zara. I'm saying what does each person do that detracts from his Jewish experience? In the way that when you read the Haftarah, you can see that they did certain things that took them from God. Okay, so what do you do that removes you from God? That's all.
Okay,
that's
I accept that. That's very nice. I like that. I think
Larry,
that's a very nice.
Larry Yashiksa, does that work?
Well, if he did it, it would. I'm telling you, each person's got to say it, Alex.
All right, I understand. I understand what you're saying. Yes, I like that.
The real question.
No, I like that.
Like, it's not like Bruce, what the other guy does. What do you
Bruce,
do?
Not Bruce, like you, your cousin Bruce you should write it down. Bruce, you should write it down.
Well,
no, I'm, really, like
I'm throwing
I like
this out
it.
Idea that this is.
I like it. You know, I think I like the idea. I like the idea.
Personally, do not what their cousin did. Yeah, I got a cousin out of Shiksa, and I have another cousin who stole. Great, but what do you do? And that's what each person. When each person reads it. He shouldn't be thinking about what did they do. No, what does he do?
Right. That alienates himself from Hashem.
Yes. And that's the lesson one could extract from this Haftarah.
I think it's a great idea. Maybe I'll use it and I'm gonna say your name.
Good to hear that there is a lesson that we can learn from. All right.
That's very nice.
It's not just stop.
Okay,
when I used to be a tour, you wanted people to relate to the site and the history of the site. When you're at the Herodian, you know, and you're talking to 20 college students all facing northwest, slightly towards Jerusalem, and they're coming there on a sponsored trip from their day school or their seminar, whatever it is, and you describe Herod and what's going on in Israel, and you say, what would you have done here, right here? This is where Herod was buried. Would you participate in the desecration of his site because he was a bad guy, like they did in the days of Bar Kokhba? Or would you think, you know, this is a leader who built massive building projects as well as the Second Temple itself? So would you be like somewhat of a Herod supporter because the economy is terrific? And, you know, in America, they claim people vote whether your economy is good or bad. That's how people vote. So would you, and many people do that, of course. That's like a bottom line thing. So if you're here in Israel now and Herod is alive building this structure and you're one of the architects making a nice salary building this, because some of the, let's say it's the architecture class from MIT. That's the group you're talking to. So you're now working on this project, you know? So how do you feel? How do you feel working with this guy, Herod? And you try to get them to relate to the site personally.
Right.
Like
you
a
do that?
Person,
Wait, you do that? You did
yes,
that?
That's what I used to do, of course.
You should, why'd you stop? That's ridiculous. You're really good at it.
Well, I enjoyed having the colo in the morning, and I felt it was going to be old to schlep around the country and, you know, dysfunctional families and, you know, my dysfunctional friends. And
All right. Chodesh Tov. I got to go. My son is calling me now.
Okay. Thank you so much, Maurice.
All the best to you guys. Thank you.
Was okay that I cut in like that?
I love it. No, it's a very good idea. I think it's food for thought. I like it.
Jews think a lot about food. That's another thing.
Oh, you owe me to tell me about the death penalty. I never heard of that.
They gave the Jewish court the authority to carry out. If they might have to get requests, but they gave them complete autonomy. Local, as long as they paid their taxes,
including a death penalty.
The government had authority, and the Torah was given to them as the law of the land.
Right.
The Persian government, they were able to enforce that.
Right.
Before that, Torah was just, you know, like who knew Torah? They showed
right.
The king found the Torah scroll and said, what is this?
I know.
I mean, what does that tell you? What does that tell you? They didn't
it tells
know.
You a lot.
They
didn't have
Torah.
Sukkot. They didn't
they
have Sukkot. I don't know how many
it.
Years. I
they
know,
had
I
nothing.
know.
They had nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Even tefillin, they didn't have. I don't think people.
Of course not. No, of course not. Rabbeinu
Yalla.
Tam, his day they didn't have to fill in.
Yeah.
Rabbeinu
all right,
Tam,
I got to get going because he's calling. He's nonstop calling me.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, all the best.
All the best.
Bye-bye. Kodesh Tov.
Kodesh Tov. Kodesh Tov.